This land is yours, land. This land is mine, land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest, the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
You're playing the intro music. Yeah, we are. I'm noticing that you're being told that there is no sound in the PalTalk virtual forum on the internet, but we'll get around that. This is another edition of The People Speak, being broadcast over BBS Network. Glad you joined us. This is a weekly show now on Tuesdays. It used to be on Wednesdays, but we've moved it. And this week, our special guest is one of my favorite people. I really admire this person. Ed Asner is on the phone with us this evening. Also, Fatima Farhat is with us this evening as well.
Hello, everybody.
There she is. And Ed, are you with us as well?
I sure am.
Very good to hear from you, sir. I've admired your work ever since the early 70s when I was a small kid and all the way up until now. And just wanted to let you know that it's our pleasure to welcome you to the People Speak radio program. It's being broadcast over the internet virtually to a live room, and it's also being streamed and archived on the BBS network for later listening and live listening. It is our extreme pleasure to welcome Ed Asner, and we have a lot to talk about, and we have about an hour to do it, Mr. Asner, and it's going to be an open forum for you to speak your mind. Later on, probably the last 20, maybe 25 minutes, we're going to try to work up the capability to have people call us. We'll put the number out there soon, and you can give us a call and ask a question of Ed Asner. And Fatima, it's good to hear from you this evening.
Well, it's wonderful to be with you. Hello, Ed. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Our radio listening audience here both on PalTalk www.paltalk.com and BBS Radio at bbsradio.com. We have a lot of people that are looking forward to this, Ed. You're a personal favorite of mine, and although I really can't say that I used to like you when, because I used to love you when you were doing your mean guy act with Mary Tyler Moore. We're going to take a small break right now for our public service announcements, and we'll be right back with our guest, Ed Asner.
Stick with us. It should be fun.
What is that? I turned it up, but I can't hear anything.
No, they're not on now.
Usually they have a background playing, don't they? You can hear the commercials while you're waiting.
Oh. Not very much commercial.
Is it all right, or should I take it?
Yeah.
Okay, welcome back, everybody, to The People Speak with Ed Asner this evening. How are you, Ed?
I'm fine, dear.
We understand that you weren't able to be with us last week. You got an opportunity with Studio 60. Is it 60?
Yeah.
That you were able to. You want to talk to us about that, Ed, at all?
Well,
what are you doing with them?
I'm not that big a presence in Studio 60, so I have to forewarn you. It looks like a great show. It's got phenomenal talent up the wazoo, and they're spending a lot of money getting it out to people's attention. I play the head of the network who drops in from time to time, a Rupert Murdoch-type person. And so far, I just appeared in my second segment. I think it was the fourth overall.
Well, we wish you luck with it.
Pardon?
And, of course, most of the audience, I'm sure, will remember you from the Mary Tyler Moore series, Lou Grant TV series, excuse me. And I just think, as I recall, you were just one of my favorites. I used to love that love-hate relationship you had with Mary Tyler Moore going on with that and carried on into the Lou Grant show.
I don't remember
what
that
were some of the highlights of that period of time for you?
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I was saying, what were some of the highlights of working with Mary Tyler Moore and during that period of time for you? Was it a lot of fun?
Okay, it was 7 years of the Yellow Brick Road.
That's a nice way of putting it.
It was died and went to heaven, and the fact that I was able to start winning awards with it made it even more fantastic for me.
Well, you did a magnificent job. I mean, I'm telling you that the chemistry between you and Mary was just so phenomenal. I don't think anybody will ever forget that. I mean, there's just no way. Because it isn't often that you get that kind of a chemistry between actors.
Well, we thrilled with each other. Right? We jived with each other.
Oh, and it showed.
You described it as a love-hate relationship, but there certainly was never the thought of hate that ever crossed my mind. So it was love. We saved the hate for Ted driving us nuts.
Of course, how could we forget Ted?
Mm-hmm. It was a phenomenal part of that show.
One of the other things that you, and I'm sure that you're very proud of your part, and I recall, again, I think one of the things that I find the most, brilliant about your performances is when you do these characters, such as the slave ship captain, Captain Davies, in the movie Roots, as you did with the Lou Grant, as you did in the Mary Tyler Moore series. And you're absolutely right. When I said the love hate, it was just like this back and forth bantering that you had. But one of the things that always came through was this compassion. In all of your parts, that no matter how gruff or hard edged that your parts were, you were able to have that compassionate aspect of humaneness come through. And it came through so subtly, but so clearly. I mean, now that is what I call acting.
Thank you. In terms of Captain Davies, what I determined to do was try to present someone who was like the good Nazi, and try to keep as many of his slaves alive while he was keeping them in slavery.
Exactly.
So that he'd also have more to deliver at the dock site.
Mm-hmm.
And what I tried to, as the script indicated, and as I tried to portray, shows what happens when the good Nazi volunteers to participate in an evil in hopes of alleviating it, and in the end becomes consumed himself by it.
Now, As an actor playing that part, how did it change you, Ed? I mean, or did it affect you to that point? I mean, that was a Hallmark movie.
No.
I think it was just an amazing introduction to an era of life that a lot of people had no awareness of. Do you think that it affected you on a personal level?
I was offered a different role in it initially,
mm-hmm.
and I felt I had done that role before, that I wanted to establish something which was a greater departure from Lou Grant in with Mary Tyler Moore, and so I said, what about the captain? They bought my suggestion. For the first time on TV, I was able to do someone who gave something of a classical background, which is what I was seeking. So it satisfied me in that respect. In terms of wanting to do the job, since I felt it was such a phenomenal breakthrough in terms of black presentation on television, I felt determined to be a part of it, because my own petty mind figured that there would be a lot of actors who wouldn't want to be identified with it. Well, to show you that my thinking was small and that my soul was small, actors were trying to cripple each other to get positioned in the show. So we got many, many good actors playing the white roles, not to mention all of the phenomenal black actors that were discovered in America at the time.
Wasn't it interesting, you know, here as a person that watched it and witnessed the Roots phenomena, I call it that, because it was such a big movie, and you're coming at it from a different aspect, from the aspect of the actors, the point of it hitting the scenes, the movie scene and the film scene as a hallmark for black actors. That's interesting. I guess I never really thought about it that way. It was just such a big movie as far as its historical presentation of such a horrific period in mankind's history. Again, you're right. It absolutely blew away a lot of the I don't know, taboos around black actors and actresses.
We had known Aunt Jemima and Step and Fetch It and maybe Sidney Poitier, but there had been no broad-scale presentation of the galaxy of wonderful, wonderful black actors who were out there.
Exactly, and they were wonderful. They were tremendous. Was there anything that really touched you more than any other area of that working on that film?
Well, for instance, in that first segment, which is what I was in, I became aware of the phenomenal work of Louis Gossett as Fiddler. I mean, I thought he was so stunning, and it put him on the map for sure.
Was he the Chicken Man?
No, I think his name was Fiddler. I forget who was it. Was it the dancer who played?
Oh, okay. Well, I saw that. I saw that a miniseries when I was a mid-teenager, so
yeah.
I've forgotten a lot of it. Right now, everyone, we're currently on the BBS network, and we're on PalTalk. PalTalk.com will point you in the direction to where you can participate in this forum with the friends that you'll soon form, and it's a good way to share ideas vocally and with text and internet links, and Ed is going in that direction. As far as the internet information in this country these days, it seems to me, I want to jump on a topic that your name has been mixed in with lately that I've noticed, and it's the attempt to unveil some sort of truth from the September 11th event in 2001. We've just gone through a pretty somber remembrance a couple of days. Today is September 12th. Yesterday was the anniversary. We have this film that the tendrils that reach out from it are connected to people that you would expect to be partisan and political that have made a movie about 9/11 that seem to ruffle feathers. I want to take you in that direction because I'm very interested in what you're currently what you're up to and some of the things that you have spoken about concerning what seems to be an inadequate investigation of probably the worst mass murder in American history. There doesn't seem to be closure to a lot of people. If you would, could you share with the radio audience and also share with our PalTalk audience where you stand in that currently?
Well, I was very unhappy with the 9/11 Commission. I find myself resistant to their conclusions. I hear many stories of witnesses who came forward with what seems to be worthwhile information, who were either given short shrift, ignored, or not considered worthwhile. And I must take great umbrage at the fact that this two-part piece that ABC put on was highly advised by Governor Kane And in the course of it, as one of the actors in it said, it was 65% against President Clinton, trying to show him more responsible than the 35% they concentrated on George Bush. And just the fact that this type of skewing could take place on major network television, in spite of all the complaints and in spite of some of the changes that took place in the presentation due to Democratic screaming, I feel is yet further proof of the inadequate presentation of what happened on 9/11.
Well, it's the perfect instrument this week. That film was a perfectly working instrument to deflect or point people in an opposite direction as far as asking pertinent, necessary questions about what unfolded that day.
Yeah.
You have witnesses who were just minutes after these events, citizens, normal people, trying to do their daily routine that were totally interrupted in it, impacted by it, being interviewed, covered in pulverized concrete dust, and talking about how what a journey it was to get out and actually survive the attack, and also making observations, several, that it was a very explosive event. They heard and felt multiple occurrences, and some have been even suspected to have a seismic signature. They were so prominent.
Mm-hmm.
And that is still up in the air as far as debate goes. Columbia University, allegedly early on in the timeline of 9/11, mentioned that they had measured a 0.21 and a 0.23 on the Richter scale that coincided with pre-collapse.
Mm-hmm.
The collapse had a signature that was not nearly the same as the one that seemed to be attached to the bedrock. But that is not... I've looked into that a little bit more, and I haven't come to a conclusion on that point. But the point I was making is you have all these witnesses who are suddenly thrust into that with a camera in front of them, making observations that could have been used as evidence. If it was a terrible crime scene, it should have been treated as such.
Oh, God, yeah.
But it doesn't seem to happen that way.
Well, you know, John, one of the most poignant statements that I heard during all of the memorial services and the statements that were made by the relatives of the victims of 9/11 was due to the fact that there is such a clouded arena around the 9/11 topic. The victims and the families of the victims feel that they're actually having to filter through and fish through conspiracy theory for lack of information based on truth and realism because of how guarded our government is with this topic. And Ed, I think you would agree that's a horrific assaults on people that have already been so cruelly victimized.
There is that total lack of information. I can remember the same lack of information was not forthcoming at the Kennedy assassination. But here the past week we have been apprised of not only were 3,000 people exterminated by this act, but that according to Mount Sinai Hospital, approximately 40,000 people who were not warned sufficiently in terms of probing into the immediate wreckage of the building and who attempted to save lives and who tried to do everything they could to save life. That's perhaps 40,000 people were affected by the toxic air of that disaster. A few of whom have already died. I think whatever may come of it, whether the conspiracy comes to life and is quashed or finally investigated, I think what it shows is the people of this country that certainly didn't during this administration. I'm not saying it wouldn't have happened under a Democrat, but with Katrina and with 9/11, I think we have some very good proof that the government is not prepared to save and take care of our people.
Well, I know for a fact that you're calling it a number, and the hospital is calling it a number of 40,000, with probably who knows how many more. And we really, and nobody even accuses them of being victims of 9/11. Mm-hmm. It isn't even in the realm of our understanding, and that's very sad. We're talking go right ahead, John.
Some of these people have even not been able to after they used up a certain amount of their medical insurance, have not been taken care of by the state or by the federal government. And that is certainly a scandal that should be remedied.
Absolutely.
Well, it had to feel that the Environmental Protection Agency wasn't charged with protecting bodies. In one interview I saw, they gave a percentage, maybe 40% of the rescue workers did not wear the necessary respiratory equipment. I think they're trying
according
to pass
to
the
Christine,
buck, point the finger elsewhere, but that
according
that
to Christine Whitman, she said they did give it that in translation, but they were not on the ground with the workers. And that evidently the state and the federal government enforcers who were on the ground, on the site at the time, did not insist that they wear lung protection. And that's where the ball seems to have been dropped.
In more ways than one,
that could have easily been done. What directive down from up above?
Absolutely, absolutely. But again, that just shows us the lack of ability on the part of FEMA or any of these organized systems of established to somehow protect the public, but have failed in each and every case. We failed in the area of 9/11. We have failed the community. We have failed the people who breathed in these toxic gray dust of filled with the remains of Americans here in Katrina. Again, how absolutely heartbreaking was that episode? It still is. We have 1,500 unaccounted for children still in Katrina.
Really?
And it's a brutal reality that says we can't protect ourselves, and that's frightening to a lot of people. And what are we doing to change it? We're talking with Ed Asner on BBS Radio with The People Speak. We are going to be taking a break right now. And before the break goes, I'm going to be we're going to have a little prize giveaway. Now, I'm afraid the listening audience over the BBS radio stations are not going to be able to participate this week, but we hope to have our lines open and available in future shows. So for our virtual audience here in paltalk.com, we're going to be giving away a free DVD of Loose Change 9/11, the second edition, produced by Dylan Avery and Corey Rowe, who were also guests on our show not too long ago. This DVD presents evidence suggesting that the official government explanation for what happened in 9/11 was a fabrication. So is everybody in the PalTalk virtual room ready?
Yeah, PalTalk people, this is based on speed. Whoever puts it in the text window in the PalTalk virtual auditorium.
Okay, it'll be the third person to give the correct answer.
Okay.
Go for it, John.
It's pretty straightforward. Full name, the character that Ed Asner played in Mary Tyler Moore. First and last name. Number, the third person to answer correctly. Watch them hold back because they don't want to be third. But, Ed, that's what's going on in our PalTalk There's a little volleying of typing and text going on, attempting to answer that question. We do have a correct answer, and we will share with our audience on BBS and Pal Talk who the winner was before the show is over.
And for Carrie, no, it is an Engelbert Humpeldonker.
Well, I can sing.
Oh, yeah, that would work. We've only touched the surface, Ed, on a very hot topic that creates angst. Somebody in the text window threw a pretty hard label on you. I don't know. You can probably just imagine any of the labels that lean toward the left. And it would make me want to ask you, why do you hate America? That kind of attitude came through, and that does happen. I don't know what. I'm not sided. I'm just here, and I want to know what the truth is. And there's no left. There's no right. There's a right and a wrong, but left and right is meaningless. It's 8:28 here on the East Coast. Of course, that's 5:30 on the West Coast. Basma, we can take audience questions by phone after this break in about 2 minutes, if you want.
Oh, great! That's wonderful.
We're a grassroots fledgling network, and we're building up the capability as we go. So what's going to happen to take phone calls about the last 20 minutes or so would be Basma or myself would need to go back into the shadows, and we'll have to open up an avenue for the callers to come through. So Basma and I can decide how we want to do that, and Don, our director, can come in and give us when we take this break and give us the details on that. But it is creeping up on 8:30. We'll be back with Ed Asner. Get your questions ready. We'll post the numbers in the Pal Talk room.
And announce the winner of the contest.
And we do have a new phone number. Don or Mike in our Pal Talk room can share that. And we'll share that over the BBS network as soon as we get the latest and greatest phone number from, I think it's from anywhere. You can call from anywhere and talk directly to Ed Asner. And we'll try to get that in there after this break. And we will be right back. I think we may be back. I think we're back. We'll just move forward. We have just taken our bottom of the hour break, our one and only break during this 1 hour broadcast. We want to get as much time in as we can to get the information out to everyone that we can as fast as we can. It's an urgent thing. There's a sense of urgency in a lot of free-thinking people who think that something's not right here, and we need to try to figure out what it is first and then do our best to fix it. And I know, Ed Asner, you're still there, aren't you, Ed?
Right.
And I know Ed agrees with me that I read Michael Rivero at antiwar.com calls it bizarro world where right, upside down is right side up, left is right, and black is white. And it really, when you read his commentary on the way things are, it's intentional. This bizarre reality is being fed to us. Like this past week when we had this absolutely, obviously a movie that ruffled feathers was shown on a time when we should have shut up and thought about it instead of having it presented to us in a docudrama sense that even the disclaimers were vague. And there were no commercials, Ed. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was even a commercial recognition before it began on ABC. I think it was totally disconnected from sponsorship.
Well,
$40 million.
A lot of advertisers are glad they didn't.
All right. We are going to, I want to make sure before we take our first caller, I'm sure they're going to get in the queue, but I want to make sure that the listening audience, I want to ask Don to make sure he gets me the correct number for the people in our listening audience on the BBS network and also the people that are listening to this broadcast over Pal Talk, put a number in there for you to call. We'll put you in a queue and we connect with you, and you'll be able to just jump right in here and ask away whatever is on your mind. So if you would, Don, if you are with me, here we go. Mike has it for us. This is for the listening audience. We're going to do that now, Mike, at least get them in the queue. If you have a question for our guests tonight and you're in the USA, we have a toll-free number for the USA tonight, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. And for the rest of you guys outside of the United States, no matter where you are, 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322. we'll see if that works, Ed. And Don, keep us posted, because we're kind of flying off the cuff here. We'll take the calls as they come in, and Don will let us know who they are and when they're coming in and all of that. In the meantime, while we wait, Ed, well, I have just been pulled to the side, Ed, and told by Don that being so fledgling as we are still working on that capability. So disregard those last messages about those phone numbers,
mm-hmm.
because Don is telling me that he wasn't clear on exactly what we were going to do with that, and it's probably better served to, at least we can field questions, Ed, from our Pal Talk audience, and they will put them where I can read them, and I'm eager to see what they have to ask you, and I'll share them with you as they pop up. So if the people in the room are still with me in the Pal Talk virtual auditorium, we are going to field questions, but the questions need to be put into the room. We have a question immediately, Ed. This question is from a person named Dennis the Menace, _1. His question, he's a fan of Mr. Asner, your audio projects, such as the Tennessee Monkey Trial with Charles Durning and Tyne Daly, and do you have any upcoming audio projects in the near future?
Well, as a matter of fact, we redid the Monkey Trial with the actual transcript. Well, it was close to the same script last fall and winter. We toured a lot of universities in the country and traded off. I played William Jennings Bryan steadily, and the role of Darrow was alternated between John DeLancey, Mike Farrell, and James Cromwell. And we had phenomenal reception wherever we went. And that tape of that radio broadcast, which was taped at the Skirball Museum in Los Angeles, has now come out. So it's a very interesting performance. That's one of the things on radio that I've come out with recently. There are Studio 60 appearances I'm doing, which is not a major triumph for me. There is the, I'll be going to Santa Fe to do play a gentleman named Craig Barnes has written there, and they will be taping that as well for a hopeful future release, dealing with putting the administration on trial. So other than doing readings around town, that right now, I'll be coming also out in December with a Hallmark movie called The Christmas Card. And that's about it.
Ed, we have, I want to put the next question that I saw pop up, I want to put it on hold for a second because it's fairly in-depth, it seems. Pretty good question. It's dealing with the actor interactions, what actors are up to. Another one I want to skip to first, though. WolfDancer55 asks this. Please ask Ed this. He wants to know why there seems to be so much hatred against actors who disagree with the government and some kind of right-winger wanting to bring back the blacklist. I know you're familiar with what the blacklist is. Mm-hmm. Can you give some of your opinion on that?
Well, it is in terms of the right wing, actors tend to be more numerous in terms of support of the left, let's say. And since in this day and age, people are glued to movies and to television and radio. Radio, which for the most part has been dominated by right-wingers in terms of the talk shows. But when you get actors out there who are speaking their minds, which are very few and far between, they'll generally be of a left persuasion. And they are listened to by the public. It's not that they're any smarter or better or more proficient than anybody else. But it's because they're seen and recognize that they provide a threat to the administration because people just might listen to them. So that's why actors are distrusted and mistrusted, unless they're right-wing actors. And why every attempt is made to dismiss them and to damn them, while the right damns Hollywood in general.
Well, Ed, getting back to the question that I kind of skipped, Sean Fensel from Emory College, he wants some feedback from you on the relevance of quote-unquote actors to the interpretation of real-life interactions.
Well, that's what we're supposed to do. We have to... A cheap explanation I use for myself is the fact that I regard myself akin to a musical instrument. And when I get the words of a good playwright, or even a bad playwright, it is up to me to be the finest instrument, or better than whoever else they could get, in spouting those words and giving them meaning, making them as realistic as possible, and convincing the listener that they're listening to a truth. The distinction I make between non-actors and actors, professionals, is the fact that you can probably take somebody off the street and give them a speech, and let us say we're doing a movie, and that the first time he'll do it well, or maybe the third time. But in terms of your professional actor, he is trained and skilled to bring up those life forces he uses in enunciating those words. He is trained and skilled in doing it each time, never sinking below a level. And that's something that someone off the street, either through boredom or fatigue, will never be able to do.
The person that asked that question followed it up with one short statement I want to share with you, since you can't hear his response. It's his contention. He says, it's my contention that to be a successful actor, you have to be a student of human interactions, and as such, have a feeling for truth. And that response leads to the next little clump of questions that appeared in the Paltalk virtual room text window, Ed, concern 9/11, which I'm really not surprised that seems to be free-thinking people who have the capability to talk with each other freely have so many questions about that event. It is really, it's troublesome, and it's not going away anytime soon as long as we have this perpetual war on an emotion or a tactic or whatever, whoever the new enemy of the day is. The first question was from Peace Lover, wanted to know, are you currently working with the 9/11 truth movement?
I'm not in. Well, I guess I am active. When certain congregations take place, I try to appear when I can. But I am not an active leader or full mentor in the 9/11 discussions. When asked to, I will speak to them with whatever knowledge I may have, putting it out there as a challenge to, in saying that I have not heard enough, nor have I been provided enough by official sources, that I think that a true inquiry has yet to be made.
Well, the two questions that followed that up, that followed that particular question, were very similar. One was from Ms. Took, wanted to clarify whether or not you were involved in the 9/11 Visibility Project, and
I'm involved in several. I get them confused, though. I'm not sure which.
There
one
are several, and the BW Polecat _1 ask if you're working in conjunction with Ed Begley Jr. on any 9/11 projects.
Well, Ed and I are friends. We haven't seen each other lately. I'm recuperating from a hip replacement, and I'm just now getting out and around again, so that he's probably been busy while I was waiting for his calls, letters, and flowers in the hospital bed. Hang on one second.
And we have, the text is getting very busy, so I'm going to have to try to retrace my steps here and see what popped up here.
Hello?
I'm still here.
Yeah. So am I.
Here's another question. This is a question from, let me stop the motion of all this information. This is a question from Hottie154. The question, Mr. Asner, do you think it's wrong for the United States to bomb Iraq? And what do you think the United States has done positively since we've been over there? What are any of the positive steps that you've seen that occurred?
If there have been positive steps, I'm afraid they've been too little and too late. I think we're in a quagmire. And I've yet to see a headline or an article that I can believe fully that anything is improving there. I think that some generals have even said that the civil war is on. I think if you'll go back to Yugoslavia, when you show what happened with Yugoslavia in terms of the death of Tito, that all of these Balkan principalities, which were made to exist under the strong leader, and with his disappearance, immediately became fractured. Everybody began looking after their own turf or their own religion, and a terrible catastrophe took place. So if anything should have been proof for Iraq, I think Yugoslavia would have been an excellent example to use in Iraq when you remove that strong leader, no matter how heinous and criminal he was, and let the country fracture into its own extreme elements.
Well, a lot of the post-planning was not a, there was post-planning that did not occur because of Donald Rumsfeld.
Mm-hmm.
And the stories have been coming out recently that, you know, he had angry reactions to those who kind of really wanted to know, what are we going to do when we get over there? How are we going to plan to leave there?
Well, I think one of the bottom lines that you could look at when George Bush came into Iraq on spurious reasons.
Well, that's a kind way to put it, Ed.
Yeah.
I call them lies.
The lies.
Yes.
Fine. I'll accept it.
Put it bluntly.
When he did that, and had no plan to save the country other than removing this dictator. In the course of that time, and even during Clinton with the bombing of the no-fly zones, the figure, which I don't think most Americans can really realize, is that approximately 75,000 Iraqis have died in this engagement. And that if you extrapolate that to what it would be the equivalent of in this country, would be the equivalent of 750,000 Iraqis have died, or Americans would have died. And how do people think we would take that in this country if this so-called life-saving action had been perpetrated here? That's an enormous number of people to have died by the simple fact of removing their dictator, which could have been done in moderate and slower means without invasion, constant pressures, and constant provisions on how to create the country after the departure of that dictator. None of that was done.
Someone made a comment, and sort of in the form of a question. Oh, it was Wolf Dancer. He was thanking you for answering the question before. Another one was, he brought up your work in the 80s when you were working to support the steel workers when they were closing the mills. And he wants to know if you're still speaking out for the unions.
Wherever I can. I was a steel worker for a short while myself in Open Hearth Number 1 in Gary, Indiana. So I know a little about steel making, and I certainly know that steel workers have practically been exterminated in this country.
Yes, and some people in the Paltalk Virtual Auditorium that are actually asking these questions are still curious about you as an actor, because that's your most memorable, pleasant, you know, wonderful side. I one other friend that I have on the internet, we were talking about you the other day, and I mentioned that you were basically a Santa, because I think you played Santa. I may be mistaken.
I've done it a number of times.
Yes, and that there's a quality to that that really, it's coming out, and the people that are actually giving instant feedback in their writing are, for the most part, really appreciative of what you're sharing with them. You always have those that it doesn't really matter. They're going to come in and stick a barb in to see if they can get a response, something a little absurd. Oh, you know, asking you why you hate America. That would be a good one. Why do you hate America, Mr. Asner? And then going through something that has been parroted and rehashed for months now, handed down upon high, a talking point of the day, all collected together and thrown and given to you as a complete package, because that's the way this machine works. They're really good at driving home a totally dead horse point, to the point to where you get so frustrated with it, you just say, okay, let's do this again tomorrow, and we'll forget about everything crazy that happened today, and maybe tomorrow will be a better day.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go into that. What are you currently, let's say in the next few weeks or months, what are your plans as far as getting yourself out to us in an acting format?
Well, I think I've said that already. Next year, I may be going back out on tour with the Scopes trial. No matter how hard we try to, that's somewhat died down because they're not passing laws in various school boards throughout the country to ban Darwinism. But there's a problem in this country when over 50% of our populace refuses to accept the Darwinian principles. That shows a lack of education, either a lack of education or the fact that no scientific proof can dislodge people from the idea that the world was created in 7 days.
The world's still flat, right?
Yeah.
I think it's still flat. There's a couple of, we're almost out of time. I want to get an answer to this one as well. Someone, Gidget13 was wanting to know, what's your most memorable Mary Tyler Moore episode?
Well, for many years I said it was the Chuckles the Clown episode, because we were under an eight ball when we were making it. And the fact that it became such a phenomenal success, certainly proved the actors and the producers right, and I will always be grateful for that. I loved every one of those shows. I didn't think, even those that were judged not good, I loved. Because when I first got that role, I was made very secure when we did the opening show, which most of the hierarchy at CBS felt it would be a disaster. And my fellow actors were all worried, were we going to be picked up after the first 13? What was going to happen to us? And I had read a number of the scripts already, and I said, I don't care whether they run us out of the city. In all my 9 years up to that point in L.A., I'd never had such a meaty, fleshy, fulfilling character as Lou Grant, due to the excellent writing.
Acting. I saw Mary Tyler Moore briefly on cable today, and I didn't watch enough to know exactly what movie it was. It was with he played Maverick, one of the guys that played Maverick. It's from 1984. He has heart failure, and it's a couple's handling.
Jim Garner,
yeah, and. There's just something about, she's just lovely in everything that exudes from her. She's
right.
A brilliant actress, and she's got charm. She can charm the socks off of you, and all of the other supporting cast. Who could ever forget Ted? Who could ever forget Ted? And we have Keith Olbermann on MSNBC, who is he's doing Ted in some of his skits. And Keith Olbermann had a commentary I want to point you to, Ed. You can go to MSNBC.com and go to his blog section for Keith Olbermann. And I highly recommend his commentary on September 10, I think. It could have been September 9. His commentary from the hole that still remains at Ground Zero, the 16-acre hallowed void that is yet to be filled 5 years later.
Yeah.
And then pointing, doing a juxtaposition between that reality that was behind him, literally, and the unreality of the work that has been done to assuage that misery. Instead of working together to assuage the problem, we're continually told to maintain the level of fear that to know that it could happen again and we're going to keep you safe and just trust us. We offer you the security. You just need to exchange a little bit of your dignity and your liberty, just a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not doing anything wrong, you don't have to worry. But we would love to be able to monitor every move that you make.
Uh-huh.
Welcome to America.
Uh-huh.
And that, to use those type of techniques on the citizenry after 5 years and to still have that void in Manhattan, it's a shame. And I think it was about an 8-minute piece.
Mm.
And it was really worthwhile to hear.
He is a phenomenal voice on present day television.
He's Edward R. Murrow, exactly.
He
doesn't hold back, and he has etiquette, and he's got tact, and he's eloquent. He doesn't really, unless he wants to be humorous about it when he's poking at Bill O'Reilly.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just a play.
Mm-hmm.
So he was very serious. I highly recommend our radio audience to
thank you for
check
that
out. There's a video link for that particular presentation. That's a pretty good website, Ed, with a lot of videos, is crooksandliars.com, to give those guys a plug because they're working pretty hard. And another one, I know I'm not supposed to plug, but I will anyway, whatreallyhappened.com.
Yeah. Yeah.
Highly recommended reading for everyone.
Wonderful.
Ed, it's currently 3 minutes away from the top of the hour. Basima, I want to, hopefully we can clear up the method of the call-in thing at some point, because Basima and I are really eager to get to a capability where we can more seamlessly interact with everybody, Ed, not just Paltalk people, but people on the telephone, speakers in Paltalk. We're going to get that capability, folks.
Great.
Hang in there. We will get that capability. We're fledgling. We're grassroots. But we don't get paid to do this, and we're doing it. The reasons that we do this are above and beyond any kind of agenda or any kind of tilted belief one side or the other. We want to make the world better, and we're running out of time, it seems. It seems that there's some people that don't mind the world falling apart because they make money from it. But it's been a great pleasure. Basima, we will clarify that in the next program. That's next week. Tuesday evenings is when the show, I think it's our set time frame at the moment. Tuesdays at 8 o'clock Eastern time. Next week is going to be Tenzing Tithong. He's the Dalai Lama's USA representative, Ed. He'll be here next Tuesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern. And if you want to listen in on the representative for the Dalai Lama, maybe a very interesting program.
Okay.
You can go to the bbsradio.com for those who are listening, bbsradio.com, and you can be pointed in the direction to listen to that particular presentation. But this has been a very informative program. It's been such a pleasure to actually sit down and have a chat with someone that's so admired from not just myself, Basima, everyone, the large majority. How can you not love this man? He's Santa Claus. It's been a pleasure, Ed. We're glad you could make it, and we really appreciated your time this evening.
I've had a lovely time with you, and you're an excellent, excellent host.
We will attempt to set aside another time for you sometime in the future. If you are going to be available, we'll let this tapestry unravel about what's happening in this planet, and we'll hopefully we can be going on a different path by then and move closer together instead of being so divided. Well, okay, that time is up, folks. It's been a pleasure. This has been The People Speak on the BBS Network and also on paltalk.com. We will see you next week at 8 o'clock on Tuesday. And good night, everyone. Bye, Ed.
Bye-bye, and thanks a million. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. We'll talk to you later.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the city wall by the relief of the fast. man was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the redwood forest, to the Gulf Stream water.